We are live at the Intentional Churches Conference. We're live, right? We're live? Yes, we are live.
Let's go.
It's pretty awesome. Well, welcome everyone to the Intentional Churches podcast. My name is Aaron Johnston. I'm the co-executive pastor at Canyon Ridge Christian Church in Las Vegas. I'm here with Doug Parks, who is CEO and co-founder of Intentional Churches based out of Las Vegas. Hello, Doug.
Hey, Aaron. Good to see you. Not on Zoom.
Live and in person. We've also got Allie Bryant, who's the strategic alignment executive at Traders Point in Indianapolis, right?
That is correct.
Hello, Allie. Hi. Welcome. So glad you're here. We've got Bishop McCray, who's the senior pastor and CEO of the Experience Christian Church right here in Orlando, Florida.
Glad to be here.
Welcome, welcome. And we've got Mike Hickerson, who's the lead pastor at Mission in Ventura, California, right?
That's right, Ventura. So that's not churros, but okay. Yeah.
All right. Let's get that right. Well, here at the conference, we had people submit questions that church leaders are facing. And really, that's been the heartbeat of this entire season three of the podcast, which is, what are the questions that church leaders are facing? And one of the things I've kind of said at the beginning of every episode is, if you're a church leader for 5 minutes, you probably have more questions than answers. At least you probably should, right? And so we took some time yesterday to gather some questions from the people here at the IC conference to just say, what are the things that you were wondering about? What are the things that kind of keep you up at night? What are the things that you're exploring? And so I've got a list of those questions right here. We're going to try to just get through as many of those questions as we can and just try to have kind of a dynamic conversation around those. And so you guys ready?
Let's go.
Yep. All right, let's go ahead and jump in. Several of the questions were really around this idea of building culture. How do we help develop culture? How do we bring people into the culture that we really desire? And so that's kind of where I want to start our conversation, if that's all right. I am curious, like, how do we help everybody on our team go the direction we hope people go? So let me read this specific question. We're just going to start with a zinger, all right? Is that all right? And then we'll move from there. This question that I'm sure one church leader asked, but many people have experienced, is how do we deal with people on the team who are anchoring us down from moving forward? So they've been on staff for some time. They are great, but they don't share some of the key culture, mission, vision with our church. They say they do, but their actions say otherwise. So there was like a subtle groan in the room when I said that. So if you couldn't hear that just in the recording, I just want to emphasize that that's what happened when I read this. And so, Mike, I'm going to throw to you to start this question. How do we deal with people on the team who aren't moving forward? And really the question behind that is, like, how do we align people in the direction we want to go?
Is firing an option?
Not step one, okay, two, okay, or three, okay. No,
that's joking aside. They can be great people and humans, but they may not be great teammates. And so, like, to not be aligned, that would be hard for me to call them great as a teammate, and that they've been around and they're anchoring us down. I think, all joking aside, where I would start is, like, that's why the mission has got to be so personal. Mm. Like, the Great Commission has got to be personally lived out, not institutionally lived out. And so if that's not happening on a personal level, I would have some questions. That's where I would start.
Yeah, that's great.
I'll also jump in there as well. I think that it's not just where they are now. We have to look at where they were when we first identified them. Mm. And look at sometimes ministry is transformational. Mm-hmm. That where we start may not be where we end. And I think the church struggles with allowing people who were once great to find a new position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 'cause the church growth is, their church complexity is dynamic. It's always changing and growing. And so if we're not personally developing as staff to catch up with the complex, then we're going to find ourselves left behind, even if we just stay static. And we're the same type of skilled player, for lack of a better term, but the organization has gotten more complex. So, I mean, you dropped this all the way through, Allie. So I want to hear your title again, and so they can explain it to us. I love it.
Yeah, well, to answer that question, my title is Strategic Alignment Executive. So basically focused on the execution or the work that we do and making sure it's aligned to our strategy in order to advance our mission. And so when you're looking at kind of how we function and how we operate, that's kind of the area that I live in a lot. I was going to reference something along that line. When they use the term anchor, I would ask, I would use that same term, and I would just say, well, are they, is there a way to clarify the, your staff values and anchor them to that? So if they're anchoring you down from moving forward, like staff values for us have always been incredibly important because we can hire and fire, to be a little crass, but like around those. And so clarity is kindness. I think we all love clarity. And so if we can really, if you can align your staff to those, that has been really beneficial for us.
I think the, I'm gonna back up kind of as the trend we're seeing at intentional churches across the country, and that is this idea of misalignment is for real, and it's probably the greatest headwind to church leadership.
Right.
And nobody really talks about misalignment and what part it plays. So then if I enter into the exact question that's being asked, I really think about, can you get to the root of the problem? What is the actual problem you're trying to solve with the person? You know what I'm saying? Is it actually a character issue? Is the misalignment in character? Because that's a different developmental thing than, oh, they're not on board with kind of a scriptural mandate or a core value issue. You know what I'm saying? You got to really know what the core is.
So we have three C's that we hire for, and it's character, competency, and culture. And so even your question of like, is the misalignment in character, or is it in a competency job performance issue, or is it in, you know, kind of like their cultural fit, the vibe of things?
I would add a C, just capacity.
Yes.
Because do they have the ability, will they be able to grow in capacity?
Yeah.
Any other C's?
Cadence.
Calling.
Okay. Cadence. Wow.
Yes.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Do they have the ability, I'm used to, so I went to HBCU, Florida A&M University, the only.
Let's go, shout out.
Yeah, great, awesome. And so, I'm used to drum majors. And so with the drum major, you think about, especially in the band, the drum major stands, he turns, he blows his whistle. When he turns, he no longer turns back. Mm. Do they have the capacity or the abilities to follow at the pace of the drum major? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes that's our interruption as well.
Wow, that's really good. I think sometimes, As leaders in the church, we set culture, or we hope to set culture, we set values, we have, some of us even have these like value statements or mission statements or whatever, which are all good things, but if we're honest, at times they're a little aspirational, right? And I think it's really important to get a read on the pulse of what are people actually experiencing? Like, I push on this all the time, but like, let's do some wide listening across our staff and even key volunteers and ask the question, how would you describe our culture? Mm-hmm. If you had to describe our culture in a phrase or a sentence, what would you describe it as? And see, does that align with who we're actually trying to be, you know?
Can I have just a practical nugget here?
Yeah.
This is something that I learned a couple weeks ago that I thought was just a great idea. So get a staff team together, whatever level of the organization you want to pull in. But beforehand, just send them three questions. Name one word that describes our culture right now. If you could change anything, what would it be? And, you know, anything that you would want to, that you're celebrating right now or something like that. But they have to bring that to the meeting written down. Mm-hmm. And then you literally go around and you say, okay, youth leader, what are the things that you wrote down? Okay, worship leader, what are the things? And there's no groupthink or dialogue, but you get straight from the source's mouth kind of where they see the culture. Because I think it can be swayed a lot of time if you do an open collaboration.
Yeah, I think I want to back up to this idea of values and kind of do a little definition a little bit from what we see. Typically, when we show up at a church, oftentimes they've got the church core values that we all have that everybody thinks are creative, but you know, I've seen a lot of them. And it's like authentic relationships.
Doug's basically saying you're not creative. Is that what you're saying,
biblical
Doug?
Biblical preaching, inspiring worship, radical generosity. You know what I'm saying? Like, we've got these things. But oftentimes what we find is some of the stuff you're talking about, these behavioral values, how we're going to act and behave as we do our work, are not clear. Most of them are oral tradition. They've not been operationalized except by, a lot of times, you only know it when you've stepped on it wrongly, what that behavioral value is. And at the end of the day, then, what you guys are talking about, I love. How do you operationalize those behavioral values and reward the ones you want to create the culture you want?
Yeah, we had a whiteboard that we would just say, when we stepped on those behavioral, let's write it down and put it on the board so that we can begin to operationalize it. Like, you can't delegate what you can't define. is one of ours. And so for us, like I'm intuitive leader, it's in my head, I'm gonna give you something to do, but then I'd get mad that you didn't do it the way I wanted you to do it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't define what I wanted you to do, so I can't really empower you if I'm not, so we have to constantly, we're saying, man, if we're delegating something, we want to define the win. That's just one, like an example.
And what you celebrate usually gets like duplicated. So we do a digital honor board where you get to honor other people, but it's all through the 7 behaviors which fall out of our 3 staff values. And then at the end of the year, we do an all staff awards. So if anybody's a fan of The Office, kind of like the Dundies, where we make it really, really fun.
The Dundies.
Yes. You guys know that
Chili's?
Reference?
Is it at Chili's?
Huh? No, it's not Chili's. Not at Chili's. And they don't get little trophies. Yeah. But I will say it's made it a fun celebratory thing of like, way to go. And you call out people. So I think that was just one little thing that we did to operationalize.
Can we do a couple of your 7 behaviors?
So the 3 staff values are humble, hungry, and healthy. And then under each one of those, there's a couple behaviors. So under humble, it would be things like be above the line. So basically make sure you ask more questions before just jumping to conclusion, things like that. So yeah, awesome. Make bold moves is another one. So making sure we're multiplying, things like that.
One of the things I am loving about the shape this podcast is taking is we're trying to have like use some real practical examples. And so I would love to move to just like a story that one of you has, because the original question was about this person has apparently a leader or staff member in their organization who is just, they love them as a person, but they're just not on board. Have you ever had somebody that you just loved, but it was clear that they were just not on board, or they were not, you know, bought into the vision or mission, and that you and your team were able to help walk in the direction of the vision or mission?
I actually had a situation, and I just had to release the person. Mm. But I released them through giving them the permission to be released themselves. Mm. And I think just transparency in conversations sometimes with foster, because there are certain places and phases that you get into ministry that just the common strategies and systems just won't work. And we have to get real into relationships again to find out, like, where's your heart in this? What do you desire for this? And then be fine as a leader in identifying that maybe you didn't do the best. Some things aren't repairable, I believe, as it relates to work. Yeah. I think things can be repaired and restored as it relates to relationship. Mm-hmm. But let's just be honest on both sides of the table about how do we move forward so that both win.
I'm curious, you may not want to share this because you never know who might listen, but can you talk about how you help them release themselves?
Well, I've set a safe zone for conversation. And the safe zone for conversation is no judgment from me, no judgment from you. Let's talk issues, facts. Let's talk desires and passions. Let's talk future. I'm reminded of a senior leader out of Los Angeles, California, who teaches a lot about promoting people, which is actually firing people. And so he would promote them in such a way, make it feel so good. Like, you know, hey, I need to release you to do what God has called you to do. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a release from what they were doing. But that's also a mental attack sometimes against the person who they work with. So for the senior leader, it may be a mental attack against them. And you just have to be comfortable in relationships. And I think that's what we're failing a lot in church. We're making so much spiritual and we're not being relational. And if you're relational and give the right platform, I think people will really tell you what they want.
Mm. Yeah, I think as leaders, we're like gifted. What I read biblically is we're gifted to build up the body. So if part of the body's not thriving and we aren't brave enough or courageous enough or helpful enough or servant leader enough to come alongside somebody on our team and go like, you're not thriving. Like, why would we not? Like, that feels like abdicating leadership to me. So you got to lean in.
And we have to, and with that in mind, we have to consider, because one of the leaders' thoughts always, and I know for me especially, is the loss of a member. Mm-hmm. We can't have genuine conversations unless we're open for that loss of membership. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what holds us back a lot.
Yeah, fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fear.
Scarcity.
Yeah. Scarcity mindset.
I had this is a really good one for us as church leaders. A mentor of mine literally said, Christ follower said, fear is of the devil. and how much of our leadership are we having to wrestle with around issues like this of the fear of loss of relationship. It's just, we got to be on alert in our own spiritual formation. How much is fear governing the?
And I think we've got voices in our head. Some of them need counseling, but voices in our head that are like, there's people that are crowds or people in our head that are causing us to make decisions that may not be the calling that God has for us, but we know that they're there. And so we make decisions out of fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. I think we're starting to get around this idea that, first of all, there's easy, like, technical solutions to a situation like this. And one of those is, do they keep working here or do they not, right? But I think the way, I'll use a word like, the adaptive way forward, right, is, okay, what needs to happen in me as a leader? What interior work do I need to do? And then how do I need to help, like, the people that are surrounding me, the people I lead, however you want to think about that, into that work as well, and see what that reveals, and keep it relational all the way along the way, is what I hear you all saying. Like, mm-hmm. Our spiritual formation is a key component to the culture that's created around us.
Yeah,
right?
The sideways conversation, I don't think that any staff member should be surprised that mm-hmm. they're not thriving. Like, it shouldn't be a surprise, then like they're all of a sudden taken back. Like, it should be a progressive conversation. So I talk a lot tougher than I actually lead.
You know, yeah.
All bark, no bite.
Ish.
I want to kind of move us into another question that came up. Actually, a couple questions. And it's around this idea of outreach. I think lots of different churches have lots of different strategies and ideas around outreach and what that means. And so, Bishop McCray, I actually want to look to you because I know you've done some outreach work. First of all, would you just help us define what do you mean by outreach? And then maybe help us, the actual question as written is, how do I develop an outreach strategy? But maybe before we get into the practical side, would you just walk us into what that means to you in your own experience?
I think outreach is finding a need and meeting it, finding a hurt and healing it. So I said that again, finding a need and meeting it, finding a hurt and healing it. I think so often that when we set up our churches, we're not always walking into it mindful of what are the needs of our community. And also, I think that we walk into it sometimes thinking we already have the solution before we do the evaluation. Mm-hmm. I strongly suggest, and when we started our church, my first move was to go to my city hall. I went in and met with the mayor, met with the commissioners to find out what were their needs. Mm-hmm. They have needs for the city. They definitely have money in the city. And starting my church, I didn't have money, but I had people. And so I decided to collaborate and partner with the community to find out, Mayor, what are you saying that you need? And then I want to say that we're going to bring people alongside. And it gave our church an opportunity to become this model, which is bigger than a Sunday. And so that's our theme. We work to see what can we do community-wise for our community. And there is a difference between missions and evangelism. And I think that sometimes we feel that we're satisfying the need because we're evangelizing. But we have not met the need through missions first. Mm. So let's find out, what is this community needing? And let's not spiritualize that. Let's just make that just, this is the base. This community needs food. This community needs water. How do we help that when we don't even have funding? We partner with our communities, our city, civic leaders, to see how can we go further.
So you've been going 15 years. I mean, tell the stats. It's so compelling.
So we've been going 15 years now. We've serviced over 185,000 families. We're strong on what can we do consistently with the community. We're constantly having new efforts. We're in about 6 different schools locally. Wow. So we're really trying to figure out how to, and watch this, it's not all designed to get people in our church. Mm-hmm. I think that's where the church fails mm-hmm. a lot. Yes. We do outreach to pack out a facility versus just doing outreach to impact a community. Mm. So if your church closed down, we should miss you for more than your worship.
Yep.
We should miss you for your efforts in the community. What did you do for this place while you're here?
Yeah. Woo.
Yeah.
All right.
I love that you're separating, because this gets really confused in churches, that outreach, the differentiation between relational evangelism and what you're talking about. And what you've done, in essence, you've deployed, met a felt need in the community, and you've teed up your people to be in relationships where that you can act in our language, activate and mobilize around relational evangelism, not to get them into a church service, but to introduce them to Jesus, like, you know, some of this big idea we're trying to get around, like get in the mission field. Stop bringing your people to the building all the time. Get them out there and equipped and trained. So I love the way you're thinking about
specifically
that.
In the context of Orlando, where you live, and like 1,500 people a week moving here?
Moving to the city, yeah. So it's, Central Florida is growing like ever, just it's changing. And you have to constantly be engaged with those civic leaders. You know, like most churches don't have the resources to continually find out what are the needs of their community. But the city always does. And we just allow them to have that information without us ever accessing it as well. We should be engaged in city plannings. We should be finding these things so we can align our church. Because when our community residents, those taxpayers, when they see that we're engaged in the actual need, it automatically gives a birth to the church. They see that, wow, they're in tune. You know, we're always trying to be relevant and, you know, and relational, all these terms we come up with in church today. And we make it hard sometimes. We're on our knees instead of let's go get in a book. let's get on the computer system and find out what are they saying. And let's figure out how can we bring that back to our local churches.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is blowing the mind of a lot of our listeners, because most of the churches I encounter do not think like what you're saying. Like, it's almost as if that city infrastructure, government, civic is a compartmentalized silo that may borderline be the enemy, you know, almost. Mm-hmm. So I hope our listeners are embracing, you're literally teeing up your people to be activated and mobilized.
Have to.
Yeah.
So one of the, like, real desires of intentional churches is that every person would have a one, somebody that is close to them but far from God. And so how do you think about, you know, mobilizing everyone in your church to go after the one and an outreach strategy? How do those things begin to come together? Do you guys have any thoughts or experience with any of that?
This is about as cheesy and hokey as you could possibly do. I stole it, it's been powerful for our church. We pray for our one at one. We want everyone in our church to have a one, their one. And so set an alarm that goes off every day in your phone. It can be 1 a.m. or 1 p.m., depends on who you are. So, but we just want it to be top of mind, and we want to pray about it and kind of move there. And it's like, it's a big deal when our neighbors come, like my neighbors come to church, and my church knows that my neighbors are about as lost as it gets, and they're showing up. And then when we talk about our ones, that, man, I'm meeting ones in the lobby are like, hey, this is my friend. This is somebody I've been praying for. They try not to make it too cheesy, but yeah. So
it sounds like when it's coming from the top, it just becomes, you know, effective in our congregations. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we have to, the senior leadership has to buy into the one.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And as we buy into the one, it has to become the conversation. As you said, we have to celebrate the one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that becomes that move for us.
I mean, your church is killing it. So please talk about it.
I would say we personalized it quite a bit, starting with the staff. So as the staff goes, you know, the church goes. So just even in daily meetings, it's the icebreaker question. You have to ingrain it into your daily kind of vernacular. And then that continues, like, out of the overflow, it comes out on the weekend. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when your job is church and running, I know I'm Gen Xer, I get kind of snarky, but when you're running the machine of the church, sometimes you can get lost in, you are still a disciple of Jesus. Are you emulating in your personal behaviors, not your job, but in your personal behaviors, the things you would expect your congregation to be doing? And first and foremost, do you have ones in your life? Are you engaging with him? Are you building relationship? And we found that that's not always the case with church staff. So I appreciate what you guys are saying, that we really, really need to focus. We have to model this more than anything.
Yeah, I'm nervous. So my one world right now is my daughters all played soccer. So I just was a soccer dad. And then people were like, I just found out you were a pastor. I'm like, yeah, don't hold that against me. You know, but just that's where all my ones are. Mm-hmm. And my daughter in a couple of years won't be doing that anymore. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to, in the process of figuring out how am I getting to the edges of our community to find some more ones when it was kind of built in.
And so, it's interesting that you say that because I find myself doing it a lot. People like, you a pastor? Or they like, what do you do for a living? I'm a motivational speaker. That's the general thing for me, you know, because I don't feel like going through, let me pray for you right now. You know, I'm trying to get something to eat, you know, so I'm a motivational speaker. But it's a lot of places that we are, that we hide from, that has accesses to our ones. Mm-hmm. And this conference has really opened me up to see, like, hey, let's get back to the one.
So do you, as we talk about this idea of outreach and impacting our city and hoping that every person in our church has a one, right? I want to get back to this question of like, how are you thinking about, are you creating a program or a ministry of outreach, or is your outreach strategy your ones? Is that your outreach strategy? Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yeah, I think
how are you inviting people to engage in the work of outreach, or is that just the baseline expectation for any person who has a one?
Yeah, I think the one concept is actually bigger and more organizational wide, I would say, because it should be the driver of all that we do. Outreach is a huge component of that. Discipleship is a huge component of that. Weekend is a huge component of that. I mean, all those areas which are in our strategy, I think, should revolve around knowing the people who are walking in your doors, knowing the people who are out in your neighborhoods, you know, and that starts with a one. Mm-hmm.
I also would add to that, I think that there has to be the both, not the or. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we have to definitely get each one of the members, the 99s, looking for the one. Mm-hmm. That's the personal piece. I also think that the church universal, the institution, has to also work to be the church, the entity that is looking for the ones. So that's the example that we give to our communities overall. And so showing maybe large things that we do so that the people of the community that may not reach the member of the community will still see the beacon. So I think it's a combination of both working the entire time.
Yeah, I always try to define those terms because they're a little mixed up to me. Because outreach, I would go like what he said earlier, is like it's seeing a need and meeting a need. Mm-hmm. And then like evangelism and the one is like Great Commission living. And so I would want our churches to be meeting tangible needs in our community. What's our community's biggest needs? Let's lean in. Yep. And like, I would want the church or the city to miss us if we weren't here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like having ones and living out a personal Great Commission is different than outreach to me in my mind.
Hey, just real practically, talk about, you guys were in wildfire zone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Talk about how you responded to that outreach as the beacon of the institution to the Ventura County, but then also how you saw, if you saw any mobilizing and activating of your people with their ones.
Yeah. So Thomas Fire hit a few years ago. It was sweeping down all of the mountainside in Ventura and burned almost a ton of Ventura. And so people were displaced, evacuation. It was pretty scary. I mean, we're right behind our house. My in-law, I mean, it was wild. So at the time, we were a church plant that got to meet in a movie theater. And so we opened up the movie theater to be like emergency housing, and then all of a sudden it became a distribution center even before Red Cross and Salvation Army was there, because we had already built the muscles that when there's a need, we will lean in and do that. And so our team was ready to go. And then it was like, well, I don't know if I believe everything that they believe, but man, if our city needs help, that church will help us. And so it gave us great reputation in the city, and that's the only reason we did it, was just to have good reputation. No, I'm kidding. we were actually just trying to meet very real needs for our neighbors that needed water and baby clothes and toiletries. And so we just had, and people just started dumping all kinds of stuff, and we were filling up theaters with it. So it's pretty crazy.
We call it street cred. So
street cred.
I understand. Yeah. Absolutely. Reputation.
That's right.
That was cute.
Yeah. So. Cute. Teach me your ways.
Well, I want to move from this conversation that's just been really rich around the one and outreach into kind of one other maybe category of questions that came in, and that's around, like, since COVID, as the church has kind of come back to life post-COVID, we see this real drive towards less of the maybe institutional type thing and way more towards relationship and trying to make everything extremely relational, right? So that every kind of touch point along the way in our churches, I think the real desire would be that people would experience real personalized relationship, not just an email funnel. Email funnels serve their purpose and have their place, but not only those things, right? And so there's a couple questions like, how do we make our engagement process more relational, you know? It seems like since COVID, the biggest missing piece has been life-giving relationships in a lot of places. And so I want to zoom in on this conversation because I think this is a big part of kind of the fabric of intentional churches is life-giving relationships. And so I'm wondering, how are you guys thinking about how every step along the way of people engaging your churches is relational? How are you thinking about that? How does that get kind of executed in your church?
I have thoughts, but I would love to hear what you're...
Yeah, so I was just thinking from an engagement pathway standpoint at the very top of the funnel, I mean, making it relational from the very beginning and knowing who your people are. So I do think it comes back to the one. A lot of the times in knowing who's walking in your doors. The other thing I would say, you know, processes and systems are great. They're at the core of my heart. But I would say...
Jesus is at the core of your heart.
Jesus is first, then processes and... No. But just because the complexity of that, and sometimes you miss the meaningful relationships in that. So when we're looking at life-giving relationships, answering the question of who are our people and what do they need, like the purpose for them, we divide it into three categories of large group space and kind of small group space. So that's like 10 to 12. And then like micro groups is like a 2 to 3 mentorship type thing. And so having options for each of those really shows that, you know, knowing the people and kind of who they are and having those kind of key relationships. The other thing I would just say is from we hop back to like the one, knowing your one and knowing how to maybe adjust your even like announcement block that they're saying things that don't Christianese, like all that, just making sure you know who's in the room. We just actually had this conversation the other day about even worship leaders and, you know, raising your hands. Well, is everybody comfortable to raise their hands? Just knowing who is in the room and making sure you're kind of targeting.
I want to add to that for just a minute. And like here, because this can be divisive right now. You know, we've gone through these years of church growth and we chase models and it's the seeker sensitive, the attractional. Oh no, we're the missional and oh, we got to, you know. And I want to say what you're saying about being sensitive, if I can right size our thinking, think about it this way. You're thinking about the one and who's coming in your door to church. Don't stop doing church. Don't be afraid of doing, but treat it like you're having a guest over to your house for dinner. Mm-hmm. Because when you have a guest over to your house for dinner, you have a one-aware filter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the only time in our family where we light candles. Mm-hmm. Maybe the only time where we take the piles off the, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we pray still at dinner, but we preface it. You know, hey, our family prays. I don't say, hey, you need to come to Jesus. I'm like, hey, our family prays. Could we pray for dinner? Anything for you? You know, that guest over for dinner. So I just want to make sure we have that frame.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to just go back. I think the challenge for everybody to get curious about is the bigger we get, the more personal we should become. Mm-hmm. Like there's no excuse that we can't be more pastoral and more personal. So let's get curious about that. One of my big pet peeves is that we create processes that we feel good about that don't serve our people well, but we feel good about it because it's all on paper and we sent the email on Monday. My job is done. No, our job is connecting people. So not sending emails.
Most churches design strategies, especially in communications, through the lens of the ministry leader.
Yes.
To serve the ministry leader. And we got to get away from that.
Yes.
I love ministry leaders, but the program you run is not in first place.
Right.
In first place are those ones. And we have to have ways that we're helping our 99 actually be a part of that solution, not binary either or thinking about one or 99, you know?
That's powerful. And that's something that we've been facing at our church, is that we are doing a lot of our events or programs based upon the leader. We're not thinking about the person who's coming in the door. And we're definitely not thinking about the person who is not introduced to our model at all. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that as we're planning whatever we're working on, we have to put in a system to plan for the plan. Mm-hmm. Let's plan for the plan versus just trying to execute the plan.
Well, I think there's a little bit of a mindset shift there. A lot of times people will say people over process. And I hate pitting those two things together because I feel it's either or you build the process for the people. So like there's enough systematized work that is done, like you said, that is well planned. So it shows love and care for the people.
I think there's a shift that's happening where it used to be institutional vision. We've talked about this quite a bit, where it's like where the church, our church is so awesome. Come join our church. And we're going to plant 10 churches in 10 years. And we have this and there's nothing wrong with that, but there's this institutional vision. Right. But I think the shift is happening, where it's like people are they're a little skeptical about institutions, if not cynical, if not real critical of institutions, all of them. And so I think if the church can move from join us as the institution to how can we help you as the individual? Mm-hmm. It's somewhat like the Home Depot church is what I've been saying it. And Home Depot is like, you can do it and we can help you. Mm-hmm. That God has given you everything you need to live the life that he's called you to. He's given you his presence, his son, his word, his gifts, his spirit, the church. You have everything that you need to live the life that he's called you to, and we can help you as the church. Instead of join our vision, mm-hmm. like how do we help you get there? So that becomes more personal.
I want to come back to Aaron's question originally, and just, this is my opinion, my take. I think in COVID, we all had to rush to digital. And whether you were already doing it, you had to double down on it, or you weren't doing it and you had to go figure it out, we rushed to digital. And I think it confused us. Coming out the other side, I think it confused us. The power of the gospel is in people. It's in us. And I go back to old school, I'm talking old school church growth guys, Gary McIntosh, who wrote about the power of a one connecting to seven relationships at least early in a church experience is critical. And so I would argue, how does your digital help foster relational connection? Not how do we depend on digital to let the institution try to connect people? How do we fight for that seven plus relationships really early in a one's life inside the church is really critical and important. And he was able to scientifically prove, you go read his research, that, hey, they're more likely to stay because relationship is something starving in people. And he wrote that stuff in like the 70s and 80s. You know, you think about now mm-hmm. after COVID, you think people aren't starved for relationship, looking for purpose, they're alone, they're isolated, they have anxiety. The church has the answer. We just got to make sure we focus our strategy on getting that relationship stuff square soon.
Well, think about how many digitalized communities there are. I mean, you know, Peloton.
Yes. Yeah,
I mean, everybody knows you.
I am a part of the Peloton.
Me too.
Yes.
Me too.
Okay. What's your handle? What's your?
Oh boy. Yeah. Here we go. Am I allowed to? No. I would say, everybody can like, dislike, I mean, all those things, but the life-giving relationships, they're still looking for it. Yeah. Even if I'm a part of all these communities online, there's still something missing that I'm missing in, you know, real life.
And I think there's an openness like that's happening spiritually in our world, that where God is doing stuff and bringing people back to him, and I don't want the churches to miss it. Like, be prepared, let's go for it, you know.
So good. We've talked through a few different buckets of conversation today. You know, we started by talking about this idea of culture and really how do you sort of alignment? How do you bring people together and kind of pull in the same direction? And then we moved to this conversation around outreach. What does that actually mean? How do we think about that if we're trying to be people who are one aware, you know? And then finally, this conversation around relationship and the power of our churches getting back to the basics, like getting back to what Jesus actually embodied, which was relationship. And so as we close our time, I love thinking about this, rather than like setting forth a statement, maybe a question. Like, as you think about these three different categories that we've talked about today, what's a question that you could form or that you're thinking about or that you're wondering about or that you would offer to other church leaders or to our listeners? Like, this is worth your reflection, or maybe it's just a question you yourself are reflecting on in any of these categories that you would just offer for us. And you don't have to answer it. Just ask the question.
Well, I've been asking these. It's like, do we love people that are far from God? Theologically, we have to, right? Do we like them? I don't know if we always do when they don't vote or think or talk or parent like us. But then the question I think I would been messing with me is, do they like us? Are they inviting us in? Because Jesus seemed to get invited into places with people that were nothing like him, and they liked him. Yeah. And he had this winsome way, and I would love for the church to recapture that.
Oh, that's great.
I think I would ask, are we adding value, or are we just producing more volume?
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah. Is the church adding value? Yeah. Or just volume?
I was going to say, do we know, you know, the metaphor of like the shepherd and the sheep, if we're all shepherding, do we know the sheep? And is, as we continue to meet people and as cities change and as even in our area, like suburbs change and all that, like, do we know the people that are coming through our doors so that we can serve them?
It's a good question. I think one for me that I'm trying to really push to church leaders, how do we downsize our content and upsize our facilitation of relationship? And that's hard because the church has primarily become content, as if content transforms people alone. No, wow. It doesn't.
That's good. Well, you guys, thanks for hanging today on the Intentional Churches podcast. It's been a gift. Can we hear it for our live audience? So grateful for this season and just unpacking together questions that we probably will never fully have answers to, but we're just want to be people who explore together. So thanks for listening to this episode of the Intentional Churches podcast. We'll see you soon.